Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Federal Employees in Review of Discrimination Rulings Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 10, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Klockner v. Solis. The case considered whether the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, or a U.S. District Court, has jurisdiction over decisions of the Merit Systems Protection Board when a federal employee both disputes her termination and brings a claim of unlawful discrimination, and the board resolves her case without reaching the merits of her discrimination claims. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kagan, the court held unanimously that a federal employee who contends that an agency action violated an anti-discrimination statute should seek judicial review in a U.S. district court and not the federal circuit, regardless of whether the agency resolved the case on the merits or on procedural grounds. To discuss the case, we have Christopher Bryant, a professor of law at the University of Cincinnati College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Bryant.
Hello. In October, I recorded a post-argument podcast on Klockner v. Solis. Today, I supplement that discussion with commentary on the Supreme Court's December 10th ruling in the case, in which the court unanimously reversed the Eighth Circuit. Klockner presented an unusually complex and opaque statutory interpretation problem arising out of the collision of the Civil Service Reform Act and major federal civil rights statutes such as the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, and the Americans with Disabilities Act. In lieu of reiterating all of the foundation laid in my October podcast, I humbly ask any listener who does not already possess a fairly extensive understanding of the issues in the case to start there and only then proceed with this recording. For now, let it suffice to say that Klockner raised the following question: which federal court or courts had jurisdiction to hear a federal employee's appeal in a case involving claims arising under the aforementioned civil rights statutes, but which had been decided upon by the Merit Systems Protection Board on some basis other than the merits of the employee's claims, such as a procedural or statute of limitations bar? This question was a surprisingly thorny one because, as a general matter, the Civil Service Reform Act channeled review of Merit System Protection Board rulings to the Federal Circuit, apparently in an effort to achieve clarity and uniformity of applicable law in the area of federal employee rights, more swiftly and definitely than would have been possible had federal employees been permitted to appeal adverse board rulings to any federal district court of appropriate venue. I said that this was true as a general matter because the CSRA recognized an exception to the exclusivity of federal court jurisdiction in, open quote, cases of discrimination, close quote. The literal wording of the statute would seem to exempt from the limitation to exclusive federal circuit jurisdiction any case in which a federal employee asserted claims arising under the enumerated civil rights laws, regardless of the basis of the adverse Merit Systems Protection Board ruling. A case is a unit to be considered as a whole, as in Article III's reference to cases or controversies, and dismissal on a non-merits basis does not change the fact that the case was premised, at least in part, on allegations of discrimination. But on the other hand, arguably the logic of the exemption from exclusive federal jurisdiction in civil rights cases was inapplicable to appeals like Klockner's that sought review of a board ruling on a wholly procedural ground. After all, those procedural rulings were precisely the kinds of issues for which the exclusive federal circuit jurisdiction existed in the first place. In my prior podcast, I suggested that, oversimplifying a bit, the case concerned a clash between two competing theoretical approaches to statutory interpretation. First, legal process theory, which emphasizes the predominance of legislative purpose, would tend to push in the direction of sending Klockner to the federal circuit, the course taken by both the Eighth and Federal Circuits. On the other hand, however, textualism, the interpretive theory most closely associated with Justice Scalia and Judge Easterbrook of the Seventh Circuit, is agnostic as to the very concept of legislative purpose and prefers instead to make the literal command of the governing statutory text the alpha and the omega of the inquiry. Textualism, of course, would tend to push the court toward reversal of the Eighth Circuit and an acknowledgement that cases like Kloeckner's could be taken to any appropriate federal district court. Perhaps for the same reason that a stopped clock is right twice a day, my characterization was, I think, borne out in Monday's Supreme Court ruling. As noted above, the court unanimously reversed the Eighth Circuit and held that the relevant section meant what it said, and thus allowed employees like Kloeckner's access to the federal trial courts. Justice Kagan delivered the court's opinion, revealing her not surprising ability to make what might have been a numbingly complicated and deadly dry read not only clear, but downright engaging. At its essence, her opinion acknowledged the convoluted nature of the statutory scheme, but concluded nevertheless, once one did the work of tracing one's way through the Civil Service Reform Act labyrinth, the command of the text was clear and therefore conclusive. Quoting her, but even with the most intricate and complex systems, some things are plain. So it is in this case, where the relevant sections of the CSRA, that's the Civil Service Reform Act, read naturally, direct employees like Kloeckner to district court. The relevant provision said that cases of discrimination went to district court. Kloeckner's was such a case, albeit one dismissed on procedural grounds, and therefore Kloeckner's case could be brought in federal district court. One might look at the ruling in Kloeckner and see it as evidence of the ascendancy of textualism on the current Supreme Court. In fact, I'm somewhat inclined to do so. If so, this is an especially important data point in a very lean data set for Justices Roberts, Alito, Sotomayor, and Kagan, who have at this date not decided a very large number of divisive statutory interpretation questions. But I add a caution. The case may reflect a possibly opportunistic embrace of textualism by justices like Justice Breyer, who has in the past been perhaps the justice most skeptical of textualism's more controversial claims and sympathetic to legal process as an interpretive method. In any event, the conservative justices deserve kudos for following their professed methodology to what no one could characterize as a conservative outcome. Gentle listener, assuming as ever that you are there, I thank you for making it this far and warmly invite your reactions to these comments. You can reach me by email at Chris, C-H-R-I-S, period, Bryant, B-R-Y-A-N-T, at uc.edu. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.